Coach, welcome back to the Championship Vision Podcast, episode 347 with Coach Will Ray. Coach Ray has over 40 years of basketball coaching experience at the high school and Division I college levels. He has served 5 years as head coach at Loyola University Chicago and 14 years as a Division I assistant, including stops at the University of Evansville and Wright State University. He is in his 20th year in his current position as the head boys basketball coach at Northridge Prep School in Niles, Illinois, where he has achieved tremendous success. He's a member of the Illinois Basketball Coaches Association Hall of Fame and the Chicago Catholic League Hall of Fame. He is a lecturer and instructor at the Five Star Basketball Camp and a member of the prestigious Five Star Basketball Hall of Fame. He's author of 11 basketball instructional DVDs as a frequent speaker at coaching clinics across the country, including the highly regarded PGC, Glazer, and Medalist basketball clinics. Coach Ray currently lives in suburban Chicago, where he also works as the athletic director at Northridge Prep. He and his wife, Diane, have 3 grown children and 5 grandchildren. Coach Ray can be followed on Twitter at Coach for Character. Coaches, let's welcome Coach Will Ray. Coaches, before we jump in, I just want to give you a quick shout out to my friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. I've been connected with their team for the past few years and have used their products for a while now. Beyond their innovative and user-friendly shooting machines, they also are great people with tremendous customer service. It's no wonder why they have become the preferred choice among top programs around the country and world. I'm very grateful for their support of the show. Make sure to check them out at drdishbasketball.com and at drdishbball on social media. And mention Legends Clinic Series when ordering your next Dr. Dish to save an extra $300 off your purchase. All right, coaches, welcome back to the Championship Vision Podcast. This is episode 347 of the Championship Vision Podcast. Sorry about that. Today we have Coach Will Ray again. This is part two in our series of Coach Will Ray spending some great time with us, giving us some gold nuggets. Coach, welcome back to part two.
Well, thanks a lot, Kevin. I really appreciate it. And if you will indulge me a quick second here, just to repeat what I said in the first part, that I'm just so grateful for everything that you do and coaches like yourself who have used the technology and using all these media outlets as a way to continue to promote the game and help coaches grow in what we do professionally. And, I completed my 47th year, consecutive year of coaching. I think that's right, 47. 20 of those at the college level and the rest in high school and, both as an assistant and a head coach. And I just, when I think back of my growth and formation as a coach, it was the generosity and goodwill of so many people that were willing to share their knowledge with me. And, that's what makes this profession great, is the willingness to help each other. And, we obviously come into a competitive arena when we play against each other and so forth. But when coaches are willing to share, that to me tells you an awful lot about the spirit that permeates this great profession of ours. So thank you for everything you do and what you've been doing with your podcasts and your Zooms and your clinics. It's a great service to all of us in the profession. So thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I'm not sure if my wife appreciates it, because right now she's doing some grocery shopping while I'm here. But it's all part of it, man. It's all part of the passion, the dedication to growth and getting better. I don't know if I mentioned it before. Coach is obviously the head boys basketball coach at Northridge Prep in Niles, Illinois. Great basketball bastion out there in Illinois, and has done a fabulous job. Coach, we're going to get right into essential practice drills that you need to do. In part one, you talked about your practice principles. Let's get a lead up into what you're going to talk about now. And of course, you're going to share on the screen your grade drills.
Sure. And while I'm pulling this up here too, Kevin, you mentioned part one of this Zoom, and I really believe that part one, as far as I'm concerned, is really the most important thing that I can share with anyone else, because it gave me an opportunity to kind of look back over my career with all the high points and lower points or disappointments and trying to glean some things to share with maybe coaches that are just getting started. So I know drills are important and X's and O's are important as well, but for any younger coach who's looking for the benefit of experience, I would go to part one and really spend more time there. But anyway, we have a series of drills that I believe transcend any particular X's and O's or particular system of play. And I like to refer to them as our daily bread. And there are a series of drills, and this list will change occasionally. I might add a drill or take a drill away, but the following drills I'm going to list real quickly and then go through them are the ones that I believe are staples for us. Again, the daily bread, right? What sustains us. And the first is one-on-one, full court and half court, and I'll show how we do that. And as I mentioned in part one, a key element to our practice session is making everything competitive. So we score everything. We keep records on everything. Every shooting drill that we do has standards, has measures. We have a 4-minute shooting drill, for example, that we do every day in practice and have done for the 20 years I've been at Northridge. And we have, we keep track of every player's, made shots and shooting percentage, and we post that, and we keep records from year to year and so on. So again, I'm a big believer in competition, not only against another player or another group of players, like in a breakdown drill or one team against the other, but I think competition against yourself, having personal standards of performance, to me, if you're going to really chart progression and see where you're making progress or not, charting and recording and keeping track of these performances, to me, is essential in being able to talk to a player intelligently, right? And nothing speaks louder than showing him his practice performance, whether it's via statistics or via video, watching practice footage or game footage. So these tools, to me, are absolutely essential in our ability to develop our team. So anyway, part of our daily bread, one-on-one, full court and half court. We also have a series of drills that we call the 2-on-1+1 buildup. And again, I'll explain each one of these. Then we have a drill that we call 3-on-3 sprint ahead, 3-on-4, 4-on-3 buildup, and then 5-on-5-on-5 half court and full court, which I'll explain. And then I want to take a couple of minutes at the end to talk about how we scrimmage in practice, because I think what we do in that realm is perhaps a little bit different than what most coaches do. So let me move on to the actual daily bread drills. And the first that we have is a one-on-one full court drill. And we will set, again, we practice with 18 to 20 players for about 2.5 to 2 hours and 15 minutes. We'll cut that back after the first game. But we always have 18 to 20 players in practice. And that's something I've been doing, Kevin, since I arrived at Northridge. And one of my early mentors of happy memory, a coach by the name of Norm Goodman, who coached, was a very successful Hall of Fame record-setting coach here in Illinois at East Lydon High School, always believed in having the best players in your program practicing with the head coach. So our 18 to 20 player practice roster is made up of the varsity team, our sophomore team, and that sophomore team may contain or may include rather one or two of our top freshmen. So our best freshmen might be practicing with us, playing at the sophomore level, and he'll have been a varsity practice player from his first day in the program. We've been very, very blessed here. We have just incredible players, great, I mean, in terms of the character of the kids, good players to be sure, but even better young men. And, you know, sometimes people want to know why we've been able to sustain our success, you know, seven consecutive 20-win seasons now, 11 of the last 12 years, whatever it's been. So the reason for that is the players. It's the guys that we've had. And I think the continuity comes in that our best players at the lower levels are practicing against varsity players every day, right? So by the time they become juniors, they'll have had at least 1 year, and in many cases, 2 years of varsity practice. So taking this one-on-one full court drill, we divide the team into two groups. Again, here we're our school colors are maroon and gold, and so our practice jerseys, but I'm using red and blue. And this is a continuous one-on-one drill that goes for 5 minutes to the right side of the floor and then 5 minutes to the left side of the floor. So we divide the court. I'll use my cursor here. We'll divide the court in half lengthwise from one basket to the other. And on one end, the red team, the red players, there's two basketballs in a drill. The red players attacking the blue player. On the other side, the blue player is attacking the red player, and it's continuous, right? So it goes from there to where make or miss, and I'm now moving to the second diagram here, make or miss, red one was attacking blue X1, and make or miss, the ball's taken out of the net, and blue outlets to blue, and then the player who was on defense, in this drill we rotate offense to defense and then out. So now the player number one who was on offense, right, make or miss, you play it live. If there's rebounds, just play like a live game one-on-one. The blue player will take the ball out of bounds and won't take it out underneath. He'll just take it out of the net rather, not take it out of bounds. And then pitch it to the line on the side of blues. And then that red number one will sprint back and transition the defense. So he's going O to D while that three player who received the ball is now attacking X1 after he makes his outlet pass, will go to the end of the line, right? So we have 20 guys on the court. The blue team will have 10 players. The red team will have 10 players. Or sometimes we'll do this on the side courts and we'll divide the 20-player roster into two 10-player rosters on each court, and it'll be five blues versus five reds. Well, while that's taking place on one end of the court, the same thing is happening on the other end. And blue number two was attacking. And there's here, which the dribble limit is once they cross half court, sometimes we won't have a dribble limit at all, especially early in the season. And then as the season goes on, we'll start putting a dribble limit on them. So once they cross the half court line, there might be a three dribble limit, right? And so we want the moves to be, efficient. You know, we don't want a back down type of thing where a guy takes 8, 9, 10 dribbles. That's unrealistic. Doesn't happen in a game against any good defensive team. So we'll give them a three dribble limit once they cross the half court. And obviously you can alter that based on the skill level of your team. But that's happening on one end of the court. And then the same thing is happening on the other end. Now player number two, who shot the ball or turned it over, X2 takes the ball, pitches it out to his red line. He joins that line, and now the blue player retreats back on defense and three attacks number two. So this is a continuous drill going on for 5 minutes, and we're keeping score. Blue against red. Now, we typically only score each basket as 1 point. So whether you shoot a pull-up three or you score a layup or an offensive rebound basket, it's one point for your team. We have, on occasion, and we do, sometimes subtract a point if the player turns the ball over. Or we might add a point if the offensive player gets an offensive rebound. But we do this for 5 minutes on one side of the floor. In this case, you see guys are going on the left side. Then the second 5 minutes, we rotate it and go to the right side. And this is our one-on-one full court drill. Again, we have winners for the day, Blues versus Red, and we change these teams.
Coach, sometimes can I ask you a question?
Absolutely, absolutely.
I love the drill, but I love the outlet and the go from offense deep. I think that's a great transition rotation right there. What if they, I don't know if you can see my cursor, what if they turn the ball over early?
If they turn, so let's say, yeah, good question. So let's say that one is dribbling the ball and X1's pressuring him. I don't know if you can see here my cursor. X1's pressuring him and X1 steals the ball from one. He still has to pitch the ball to the three.
Pitch line. The ball over. Okay, I guess that's what I figured. Yeah.
He can't just take it down the floor. The guy goes from defense and then pitches the other player. One goes from offense to defense, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I love the transition part of it. It's continuous. There's no breaks. I absolutely love that.
It's competitive. And I tell you the other thing I like too, Kevin, if you're running a tryout at the freshman level, for example, and I don't know how many players you might have trying out for a team. I think this is a real good staple for tryouts. Find out who can dribble, who can get his own shot, who can play defense, because there's no rest. I mean, once you're on the court there, I mean, you're going offense to defense and it's full court. So, I mean, it's a full sprint type of activity that we really, really like, especially we use it with every level of the program, but it's a good tryout activity as well.
Coach, they have to stay. You try to keep them on.
On their half of the court until they cross the free throw line. And then at the free throw line, they can come over to the other side of the basket to score.
Okay. That's great. Thank you. Thank you for
sharing. We don't want them in the middle of the court colliding into each other.
Right.
So we sometimes will put cones across from top of the key to top of the key to remind them to stay on their half of the court.
So I'm assuming you rotate sides too to work both sides of the court or no?
Yes. So we'll do 5 minutes. Like here, the Reds are always going to go on the left side of the court and the Blues are always going to go on the left side of the court to the opposite side. That's 5 minutes.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
Second 5 minutes. Now, Blues going to the right. Blues going to the right and Reds going to the right. So they get a chance to work both sides of the court.
That's awesome. All right. Yeah. Thank you, Coach. Awesome drill.
Okay. All right. Let me move to our one-on-one half court drill. And again, I see these drills as essential for any system, whether you play man or zone, combination, press, you run motion offense, flex, circle motion, whatever it might be, ball screen, continuity. I think X's and O's are irrelevant in this case. These are things that I would do regardless of our style of offense and defense. So the one-on-one half court drill, Kevin, we put three players at a basket and we will put a time limit on everything. So there might be a 3 minute time limit, could be a 2 minute time limit, could be a 5 minute time limit. And here, it's offense to defense and out to the end of the line. Three players at a basket. And for example, the ball starts underneath the rim. We'll have three player or four player groups at each bat. We have six baskets in our gym. If we have 18 guys, there's three guys at a basket. Somebody starts the ball underneath the bucket. We put whatever time limit on the clock. We blow the whistle. Again, I have two varsity assistants and a sophomore head coach. So, there's four of us on the court. We're kind of, meandering around and coaching and so forth. And then three, in this case, as you see in the diagram, He pitches the ball to one. We always start this drill outside the three-point line, and we'll designate the spot on the floor. So we'll say one-on-one, half court, top of the key, 3 minutes. Okay. Here we go. You know, and, you know, three pitched the ball to one, and now one, again, use whatever dribble limit you're comfortable with. I think when they're starting from a standstill like this, the three-point line, I would never let them have more than three dribbles and more than likely only two dribbles. And again, we want to make our drives efficient, and we want to clip the hip of the defensive player, and you know, make it a straight line drive. So here we practice, you know, whatever you teach. We happen to like permanent pivot foot. We teach a jab step series to our players. We have what we call a strong side and a crossover start. We teach a shot fake, one dribble pull-ups. We teach going all the way to the basket to finish. So whatever your teaching preference is with one-on-one basketball or one-on-one defense for that matter, it comes out in this drill. And again, three will guard one, one will shoot the ball, play it until you either miss, until somebody gets a rebound or score. Offense, the defense out. So one takes the ball out of the net. If he scores, pitches it to two, closes out on two, and there, here we go. Again, we keep track. We score everything by ones. Occasionally, I might give the offensive rebounder an extra point. We want to emphasize offensive rebounding. We might do this, Kevin, for, you know, maybe 9 minutes. We'll do 3 minutes at the top of the key, 3 minutes from the right wing, 3 minutes from the left corner, whatever. We'll move spots on the floor. Always winners and losers, always consequences and rewards. And so we'll do something like this. We'll never do one-on-one full court and one-on-one half court on the same day.
Okay.
We'll alternate those. But again, this is one of our staples and something that we believe is important in teaching individual offense and defense.
So if the defender gets the ball, he or she is outletting to the next offense, and then the offense goes to defense, correct?
The offense goes to defense, correct.
Right.
Offense to defense in our drills, yeah.
Okay, tell me what you think about. We have a drill called Johann Box, very similar to this. I want to get some other ideas to you, but what we do is we focus so much on offensive rebounding. So the offensive player stays in and keeps shooting on makes. Even if they make it, it just forces defensive blockouts and aggressiveness. Yes. I don't know. What do you add that into?
Yes, in fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we do the same thing. Not always, but we'll say, if you can get the ball out of the net, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So the offensive player, let's say in this diagram, number one drives the ball, takes a pull-up jump shot, whatever. And by the way, we do like the mid-range jump shots. So I know I'm in a minority in basketball today, but I believe that players need to be able to score from three different ranges. And I could, you know, give you my thoughts on that. If anyone's interested, they can email me, and I give my email in the first part of this. But I like the one dribble pull-up jump shot, and we practice it. And we think, you know, I get it. I understand the analytics, but there's another side to that as well. But anyway, let's say one shoots the ball and scores, and three doesn't block out, and one can get the ball out of the net, he can score again. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yeah.
We allow that in some of our drills. We do it here, and we'll also do it in a 5-on-5-on-5 drill that I'll show you in a couple of seconds here when we get to it, that we think is valuable. So what I find to allow that, it's better in a smaller breakdown drills or like a one-on-one than it is when we do a 5-on-5. It gets pretty aggressive, it's pretty physical. But to me, that's a great, I agree with you. It teaches both offensive rebounding and defensive blocking out. Because if you don't hold your block out, that player's going to get the ball and score again.
Sure. Yes, sir. I love it.
So that's our one-on-one series. All right, let me move on. All right, this is really one of my favorite practice activities, and one that we feel, if somebody said to me, you can only run one drill in practice for 45 minutes or something, or a half hour, I would run our 2-on-1 plus one buildup. this would be my drill of choice, because I feel, Kevin, that we can teach our entire system in this particular drill. So let me explain it. So again, we divide the squad into two teams. Again, for the sake of clarity here, blue versus red. And then we will place a cone. I don't know if you can see it, but there's a green cone right at center court. Okay. And again, when we build our team, sometimes I'll decide the teams as I do the practice plan. On other occasions, I might just pick the two captains or two seniors or whatever and have them choose the teams, right? So in this case, we're giving the ball to the blue team first, and the red team is starting on defense. So X1 is on defense at the basket end. The blues are on offense. They start in their back court. There's a line of reds. On this case, the right sideline, there's a three player from the blue back on defense at the blue basket. And then there's a line of blue players on the left sideline. Okay. So I'll blow the whistle. And again, there's four coaches. So typically what we do is, by the way, in any of our drills, we always insist on our coaches having a basketball underneath their arm. And we have usually a couple of managers, but, you know, again, in terms of practice organization and running an efficient practice, Kevin, nothing drives me. You know, we all have our pet peeves and our idiosyncrasies, but one of my pet peeves is nothing drives me crazier than a ball being deflected out of bounds and then everybody waiting while two players shag the ball. Or, you know, usually we try and keep it within the confines of the court. Occasionally we say no out of bounds line, so they have to aggressively go after the ball. But if we're playing out of bounds lines and a ball gets deflected, goodness gracious, we got four coaches, we have two managers. While guys are playing, everybody have a ball under your arm. Ball goes out of bounds, closest coach, just flip the ball in, let's keep the action going. And maybe that's, people will say, well, that's laughable and whatever. To me, that's a big deal because I don't like stoppage in the action once we start practicing. So, again, we have four coaches, one on each baseline, one on each sideline. Managers are usually scoring the drill. And so the two offensive players, one and two, they take off on the whistle. One, and they've got a momentary two-on-one fast break against X1. As soon as the ball crosses a half court line, X2 now has to go around the cone. He enters the play. And so we have a momentary 2-on-1 that becomes a 2-on-2. So the reason I like this part of the drill is because, as we know, those openings in the game are very, very, they close very quickly against the good defensive teams. If you have a two-on-one advantage, whether it's on a fast break or in half-court offense, you need to make those decisions instantaneously and deliver the ball to the open player. Mm-hmm. And so I like the fact that there's a built-in time element here, time constraint, that if one and two in the blue don't take immediate advantage of that two-on-one, X2 is going to be right involved, and he's going to take that advantage away. And then at that point, it becomes a 2-on-2 game. Now, again, what are you teaching here in a 2-on-1? Again, if you have five coaches in a conversation, they might teach five different approaches to a 2-on-1. Again, what a coach teaches to me is not as important as making sure that you have an activity in practice where those things that you believe. Remember, we talked about the philosophy and the game. And the link between the philosophy and game night is that practice. Okay, whatever philosophy a coach has on handling a 2-on-1 fast break, you want to see that come out, play out in the game. Well, what are you doing in practice to link those two together, right? So for us, our philosophy is, you know, we want to make the decision at a certain point. We want to have the ball in a certain hand. We want to make certain types of passes. All that is taught in this particular phase of the drill. All right. What about defensively? What is the coach's philosophy there? Is he teaching X1 to, you know, stop the ball immediately and then have X2 filter back to cover the open man? Is X1 gonna stunt or bluff at the ball and retreat? Is he gonna run back to the front of the rim and give up a jump shot and allow no layups? Again, every coach has his own philosophy. To me, that's not the critical point. Is I want to know, I would ask a coach, what are you doing to link your philosophy with what you want to see on game night? Okay.
Yeah. What is yours, coach? I want to hear yours.
All right. So we would teach X1 here to take away the layup, right? So to bluff or stunt, as people like to say today, bluff and retreat is our term.
Yeah.
Bluff and retreat. So X1 tries to get one to pick up his dribble if he can, or to shoot a jump shot, and then stop the layup, in my opinion, and have X2, as he's coming into the play, he knows that X1 is going to bluff and retreat to stop the layup, make X1 have to make the decision, and then X2 is going to now filter back in, and he's going to cover. So if X1 bluffs and retreats and covers 2, X2's coming from behind trying to disconcert the shooter, right?
Right.
So that's our defensive philosophy. Our offensive philosophy is one must have the ball in his inside hand. Now, I'm just adamant about that. And if a guy doesn't have the ball in his inside hand after they're done, he's going to get 5 fingertip pushups. So our feeling is there that if one's coming up the left side of the court, he's got the ball in his right hand. Why do we teach that? Because now he can make a bounce pass off the dribble to 2, or he can cross the ball over to attack on the left side of the bucket, right? So it also allows him the opportunity, if the ball's in his right hand, if 2 happens to be ahead of the basketball, which he should be, our teaching point to 2 is you better sprint ahead of the ball. So if 2 gets down there before 1 does and doesn't get the ball, he might, if the opportunity presents itself, cross underneath the basket and then open up the right side of the floor for 1 to attack. So we have a variety of things that we try to teach here in the 2-on-1 phase of this, okay? Then once it becomes 2-on-2, again, what are you teaching? Are you going to teach us a ball screen situation? Are you going to teach a pass and cut? Are you going to space the court and play draw and kick basketball? Again, whatever your teaching points are, you can teach them here offensively, both in how to take advantage of the 2-on-1 and then how to attack 2-on-2. Defensively, are you playing the ball head up? Are you forcing it sideline, forcing it middle? Are you playing pack, push, whatever? Are you in the gap? Are you man conscious, ball conscious, whatever? Whatever your philosophy is, you can teach that in this drill. All right, so now 2-on-1 maybe becomes a score, maybe it doesn't. And I'm going to move on to the next frame here. Now, I don't know what will happen here, but whatever happens, score or not, the Reds get the possession of the ball, the Blues will automatically pick up full court on a make or miss. And that's what we do defensively. We're pressing on makes and we're pressing on misses, right? So it's an automatic pickup. Immediately, you guard the closest man. You're not assigned a man because players are going to rotate. So, for example, if one drives it in and scores, X1 takes the ball out of bounds, one picks up the closest man. So he picks up possibly X1, 2 picks up X2, and now they deny the inbound pass. And again, whatever a coach's philosophy might be on his full court pressing game, you would teach that here, right? 2-on-2. So now the Blues will press the Reds up to half court. And then the drill continues going in the opposite direction, which we see in this third diagram here. Once X1 and X2 cross the half court line, that the Blues fall out and go to the end of the blue line. Now the same thing happens on the other side. There's a blue three on the other end playing defense. X1 and X2 in the red are attacking the three. As soon as the ball crosses the half court line, the next player in line comes around the cone. And now we have, again, a two-on-one, two-on-two situation. Again, two-on-one plus one. And then the next player in the red line jumps in on defense at the other end. And now this becomes a continuous activity for 5 minutes. We run this for 5 minutes.
Okay. Do you give constraints for points, like let's say a foul, okay, plus one? You know, I mean, what? Yeah.
Yep. It all depends on what the when we first teach this, Kevin, all we score is the baskets. One point. I don't want to give three for threes and twos for twos because, you know, guys will become a little bit, you know, I still believe the game needs to be played from the inside out. Sure. So right now, you know, when we start teaching this, everything counts as one point for every made basket. Right now, yes, we can say an additional point for an offensive rebound. Take a point away for a turnover. If you exceed the number of dribbles, it might be an automatic turnover and a minus one. You know, we can say, you know, whatever constraints or points you want to emphasize, I mean, go at it. I mean, that's the whole idea. So for us, this is a 2-on-1 plus one continuous drill for 5 minutes. We score it. And then the buildup phase of this is that we'll do this for 5 minutes, 2-on-1 plus one. Then we'll do it for 5 minutes, 3-on-2 plus one. And then we'll do it for 5 minutes, 4-on-3 plus one, right? So we'll score the entire 15 minutes. So it's blue against red for 15 minutes. And we've built up the game from a 2-on-1 plus one to a 4-on-3 plus one, where we're pressing, we're playing half-court defense, we're attacking the press, we're running half-court offense, we're running our fast break. Again, is it a numbered break? Is it whatever? Whatever your principles are, again, to me, that's up to the individual coach to decide. This is an activity where I believe you can teach your entire system short of 5-on-5, right? So again, if I had only one drill for 45 minutes, this would be it, you know, or I would run this for a half hour, maybe 10 minutes of 2-on-1, 10 minutes of 3-on-2, 10 minutes of 4-on-3, and I'd take my last 15 minutes and go 5-on-0 and 5-on-5, and that would be my practice. If I had extra time, I would obviously shoot and do these other things. But if I'm given an opportunity to just build a team in terms of team play, not individual fundamentals, this is, to me, an absolutely bread and butter daily bread drill for us. And we teach our pressing, and I'm a zone coach. So we can play our zone with four guys. We can play it with three guys if we choose to, or we can play man-to-man, whatever it is that we want to emphasize in a given practice. So the buildup phase of this is to add 3-on-2 plus one, 4-on-3 plus one. The rules of the drill remain exactly the same.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's a great drill. Absolutely, Coach.
Okay. All right, let me move to another one. And this is one that we call 3-on-3 sprint ahead. And again, we divide our 20 or 18 to 20 man squad into two teams. And again, we're using red and blue here for clarity's sake. And we start by putting all the reds on one end of the court and the blues on the other, as you see in the first diagram here on the left side. And we start this as a 3-on-3 game. So again, are you running pass and cut, pass and screen away? Are you running space to court, drawing kick, ball screens, whatever? Maybe all of those things, I don't know. Whatever your 3-on-3 teaching would be, that's what I would emphasize to the reds. And then your 3-on-3 defense by the blues. So again, they attack 3-on-3. Once the red team scores or the red team misses, the blues are going to sprint to offense, and the player that gets possession of the ball, in this case three here on the right side, he's going to stay on the court. So he's going to pitch the ball out to players four and five who are in the corners, and now they're going to attack the three defensive players, which are one, two, and three. So the Reds are going O to D, offense to defense, right? The Blues are going defense to offense, but only one of those players stays on the court, whoever gets possession of the ball, right? So three, let's say the Reds score, the ball goes in the net, three just takes it out of the net and pitches it to the, and those two guys, four and five, cannot take off until one of the Blue teammates has possession of the ball. And now four and five sprint up the sidelines, three pitches the ball out, he goes defense to offense, one and two, since they didn't get possession of the ball, now they join the line, and it goes back the other way with the Blues attacking the Reds, and then the Reds back attacking the Blues. So the same player could conceivably stay on the court for the entire time for the Red or Blue team. And one of the things we're trying to reward here is aggressiveness, right? And we tell the players, look, we're watching, you know, what players are going after the ball? Who wants to stay in the longer, the longest? You know, are you in a hurry to get out of the drill and rest? Or are you one of those kind of guys that wants to grab the ball and continue playing? So again, it's a really fast transition situation. We're teaching both our offense and defense. And, you know, I find that this is one that, again, I like fast moving full court activities. And this is one of those kinds of drills for us. You could do this 4-on-4, sprint ahead if you wanted to. We don't, but you can if you'd like.
Yes, and Coach, I'm finding that you incorporate a lot of transition in your practices, and I kind of, from my experience, I want to give you my opinion, is that you can really find the breakdowns in, you know what I'm saying? I think a lot of times we practice half court to look good as coaches. But when we break it down, we bring it to full court, man. That's when you see all of the breakdowns. Am I off on that?
I agree completely. Yeah, let me share two thoughts that kind of inform my thinking on this. And the first is, you know, the great Coach Knight taught us that there are three phases to basketball: offense, defense, and conversion. And then he would always add, of the three, conversion is the most important. Right. I mean, Coach Knight taught us that, you know, four decades ago. And I heard it, wrote it down at clinics. You know, I happened to work for Jim Cruz, who was one of Coach Knight's assistants and former players. But yet sometimes we spend a lot of time working on half court stuff. So I've taken Coach Knight at his word. Three phases of basketball: offense, defense, conversion. Conversion is the most important.
Right.
And then the other thought that I like to share that informs my thinking on this is I had a conversation a number of years ago with a guy who was an assistant with the Chicago Bulls at the time, been in the NBA. He's retired from the NBA now, but he was in the NBA for a long time. And we were talking about the San Antonio Spurs and talking about their great teams in the 80s and so forth, 90s, when they won whatever five NBA championships. And I asked him, I said, what makes the Spurs so effective? And he said, look, let me tell you, they play the game at 70 miles an hour the entire game for 48 minutes. And I said, whoa, you got to explain that to me. What do you mean? And he said, well, he said, if you watch an NBA game closely, he said, you'll see occasions where the players play at 90 miles an hour. In other words, there's a steal or a pitch out, and everybody sprints the court at 90 miles an hour. He said, but then that'll be followed by a possession where it's at 50 miles an hour. You know, things kind of slow down.
Yeah, good point. You know?
And then he said, but not the Spurs. He said, the Spurs, and he felt that that was really one of the keys to their success, is that they were at that 70 mile an hour pace for 48 minutes, you know, and obviously credit to Coach Popovich and, you know, Tony Parker, the point guard, whoever, and the way they played. but he felt that's what made them so difficult to play against. So we try to incorporate as much as we can in the full court for that, for those two reasons. You know, what I learned from Coach Knight and learned about the San Antonio Spurs.
70%, that's a great inside fact right there.
Good. 70 miles an hour.
70 miles per hour, I got you. Okay, for sure.
And you know, it's true. I was at the Bulls game last night. Ironically enough, they were playing the Pacers. We took our team there. One of our dads has a box, whatever. And I'm watching the game. And every time I watch basketball, that rings true. The game is at times played at 90 miles an hour and then 50 miles an hour. And can you sustain a 70-mile-an-hour pace for the duration of the game? I think that makes you tough to play against. Like you said, that a lot of mistakes show up when you do that. Okay, let me move on to the next thing here. And we have a drill that we call 4-on-5, 5-on-4 buildup. So we'll do this also 4 against 3, 3 against 4. I think I may have listed it when I put the list of daily bread drills. I said 4-on-3, 3 versus 4, 4 against 3. We do both, 3 against 4, 4 against 3, or 4 against 5, 5 against 4. Now, what I do in this situation, Kevin, is a little bit different than what we do in the other drills. In this case, I'm going to take the top 8 or 9 in the varsity playing rotation, and I'll keep them together. So in the drills that I've described up to this point, we've divided our 18 to 20 player squad evenly, right? So our best players are divided into two teams. In this particular drill, we put our best players on a varsity together. So that would be the red team here. So there's 4 on the court, and then there's 3 off the court. So we got X1, 2, X3, X4 together. Those are 4 top varsity players. And then the next 3 top varsity players. So that's a 7-man rotation. It could be 8, it could be 9. Okay. So we keep them together, and then everyone else goes on a blue team. So that's everybody else that we have left in practice. So if we put, say, 7 players together, 8 players, the other 12 players, we have 20 players at practice, will be on the blue. All right. And this is a continuous drill. So the Blues get the ball and they go 5 against 4, or from the Reds' perspective, 4 against 5, right? So I'm focusing on the Reds now because those are my top varsity guys. And I'm coaching them along with my top assistant. And then my other two coaches are coaching the Blues. And they're now playing defense at a disadvantage. It's 5 against 4. So here we're able to start teaching some of our scrambling concepts, our zone defensive concepts, where they have to, you know, guard 5 with 4, right? So you have to play some zone, and you know, who's the most dangerous player, the player with the ball, and who are the next 2 most dangerous receivers, making sure we're closing out. All the elements of playing defense at a disadvantage, right? So 5 against 4, score or miss or turnover, the Reds get possession of the ball and they transition 4 against 5. So they're going to be at a disadvantage on both ends of the court. They're at a disadvantage on the defensive end with one less player. But then when they get possession of the ball, again, they're at a disadvantage with one less player. So the Blues have only one rule, is that they must double team the ball. So now the Reds are transitioning against the Blues. The 2 closest Blues have to double team the ball, right? Because they have a 1-man advantage. I don't want one guy to just hang at the rim. I want this to be a very intense, high pressure situation for our top 7, 8, 9-man rotation. And now this continues up and down the floor. We might put 10 minutes on the clock. It's a 10-minute game, but I will blow the whistle whatever I feel it's time to make substitution. So I might, you know, because the intensity of the drill is so high and the fatigue factor enters into it pretty quickly when you're playing at a disadvantage on both ends of the court, that I might let him go up and down the court maybe once or twice, maybe three times at the most. I'll blow the whistle, and then I'll send these three players in, or four players, whatever I have out. I might have another unit of four. I might send that unit in and then take those guys out and let them rest for two or three possessions, right? So this continues for 10 minutes, and then we score it. Again, score it any way you'd like. 1 point for every basket. Give an extra point for an offensive rebound. Take away a point for a turnover. You know, whatever scoring system you want to emphasize that day. But I find that this is really an important drill for us because it enables us to really play our best players together. And I believe that there's a time and place in practice where your best players, your best varsity rotation, your top rotation needs to play together so that they can get used to each other, know each other's strengths and weaknesses and what have you. So this drill for us, Kevin, is an important part of our daily bread or our practice pillars or whatever we want to say, because it gives our guys a chance to play together in a stressful situation, right?
Yeah.
A stressful situation.
Coach, so, when does the other blue rotate?
When I rotate.
Okay.
So when I blow the whistle, it's substitutions for both teams.
Okay, both teams. Okay.
So they'll send a new five-man unit in. I might send in a new four-man unit, or I might send in three new players, leave one on the court, whatever, depending on how many players I have on the red side of the court. That's what I'll – and then the blue coaches will substitute at the same time.
Right, right.
Okay.
So you like it. Let me tell me if I'm wrong. You like it because it's disadvantage. Mm-hmm. Kids got to think, right, and make decisions. And you're really almost giving the blue team an advantage.
Oh, yeah.
Making your starters have to work a little bit, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And let me add that, as I said, there's rewards and consequences. If the red team loses, there's also always a consequence. And the reward for the blues will be to get a drink of water or go shoot free throws. If the red team wins, they're the top players. There's no consequence for the blues.
Right.
I never give the blue team in this case a consequence. In the other drills that I've explained, when the teams are evenly matched, then there's always a consequence and a reward. Here, if the red team wins the game, they played at a disadvantage. You know, we may be have everybody go shoot free throws, or we don't take water breaks. We do our water breaks during free throws, but there'll be no consequence for the blues since they're usually sophomores and juniors that aren't playing, whatever it might be.
I love that. Yeah. Great drill, Coach.
Okay. All right. Let me move on to the next thing. And this is one that I really especially like, and this is 5-on-5-on-5 half court. And, you know, I don't take credit for anything original, but I've never seen this, and I don't know how we came upon it. I think just because we were doing constant transition stuff, and you've probably seen it, or somebody who's watching the podcast has seen it, but we love it. We think it's the best transition drill that we do. And so here's how we do it. We break our squad down into three five-player units, right? So for clarity here, we have a blue unit, a dark blue unit, say, a light blue unit, and then a brown unit, okay? And so we start, you notice there's a dashed line between the circles at the end of the court where we're starting to drill from. And we're playing, notice it says half court on this end. We're playing only on this half court right here. Hope that makes sense. So the dark blues have the ball. The browns pick up at the half court line. And so we'll play this for whatever, 5-10 minutes. and I'll blow the whistle. And now the dark blues will attack the Browns. So it's a set situation. There's no players coming in from out of bounds or whatever. It's 5-on-5 set. But it's quickly going to evolve into a transition drill once we start playing. So the Blues attack the Browns. Make or miss. Make or miss. The Browns are going to get possession of the ball. So if you look at this diagram here, let's say the blue team scored. The Browns are going to take the ball out of bounds, and the Blues are going to go from offense to defense and press the Browns up to half court. Okay? The Browns have to inbound the ball. Again, if you want to run your press attack, whatever, that to me is not the key thing here. Coach should do whatever he's inclined to do philosophically. But the Browns are going to inbound the ball. They have to at least inbound the ball to one of their teammates before they clear the ball to the light greens or light blues, whatever that is. I guess it's green. To the light greens, they have to clear the ball to those one of those five players, right? And those five players must stay behind that dash line. They can't start creeping up the floor.
Okay.
Okay. So, again, the Blues score or don't. Browns get possession of the ball. They have to advance it to a teammate before they can clear the ball to the light greens. Once the ball is cleared to the light greens, the Browns are going to step off the floor and the Blues are going to turn around and play defense twice. They're going to play defense again. Okay. So they're going to go from full court defense. The ball's cleared to the light blues or greens, whatever it is. And now the Blues are going to turn around and play defense again. They're going to have two defensive possessions.
Love it.
And in the Blues, I'm not doing this any justice. In fact, I think I have this. We videotaped all of our drills. Couldn't figure out how to access it. But what you see here in print is not what's going to happen. I mean, it's chaotic. It's crazy in the sense that it moves very quickly. And if there's any delay in the, conversion is as much mental as it is physical, right? And if there's any delay on the part of those Blues, and it happens invariably when we first teach this, that the Blues will play defense to half court and they'll stop. And the Browns will outlet the ball to the Greens. The Greens will sprint down the floor and get a one-on-nobody layup.
Right. And
they'll learn quickly that you have to convert.
Yeah, convert. Yeah.
You go offense to defense twice, and then you are going to go to offense again and then get off the floor, right? So a team will play four possessions. They'll have an offensive possession, a half-court defensive possession, right? And then, a full-court defensive possession, a half-court defensive possession, and then they'll inbound the ball again against the press. So this gets really, really high energy, high speed, very quick. And then we'll score this. This is one drill where we'll allow the offensive team to take the ball out of the net and score again. The problem is it becomes very, very physical. And right. So we have to be careful because you have 10 players going after the ball as it comes out of the net. So we're careful not to do that very often. And if we do, only for a minute or two, and then just to enhance the aggressiveness of the players. But we call that 5-on-5-on-5 at the half court. And it's an activity that we really like and one that we feel builds, again, that conversion, that quick mental transition from O to D or D to O.
Yeah, and what it shows, Coach, is what you're showing is you don't always have to run full court to get transition. This is a great drill. Actually, I love this. We actually do a lot of that when we're teaching our offensive half-court sets. So the kids have to transition from offense, defense quickly. And I love the press aspect, because if you're a pressing team, man, you're pressing on all banks.
We're pressing on makes and misses.
Yes, yes. And this is great for a pressing team who does that.
Yeah. And you know, I always go back to the many things that we all learned from Coach Knight. And one thing that he would always say is that the basketball favors the quick thinker, right? And transition in basketball is, I believe, far more mental than it is physical, right? I mean, it stands to reason that if you take a player who is maybe a little bit slower than another player, but he thinks quicker, that he's going to get an advantage. Now, the quicker player will eventually regain that advantage or gain his own advantage, but the player that transitions from O to D or D to O the quickest mentally is going to have an initial advantage, to be sure.
Absolutely, Coach. Yeah. I love
it. All right. So then we take this then, Kevin, to a 5-on-5-on-5 full court drill, which
court.
Yeah, which I think many coaches will run. Again, three teams, and then we'll have a dark blue, a brown, and a green or light blue, whatever that is. And we will transition full court now. And we can do this a variety of different ways, right? We can assign a coach to the brown team, and maybe they're going to play only zone defense on that end of the court, playing only, playing a 2-3 or a 1-2-2 or a 1-3-1. We'll assign another coach maybe to the light blue or green side of the court. He's going to play only man-to-man, and whatever defense he wants to call, maybe he'll call pressure man or switching man or, sagging man. There we go. And then we'll have the blue team go offense. If they score, they can press. If they miss, they can press to half court. If they we can also do this where we keep the blue team on offense. You know, they go back and forth two or three times, attacking different defenses. So, you know, we can play around with this in a variety of different ways to make it challenging for our players. But a 5-on-5-on-5 full court drill is also important to us in building our team. So
all right, now the rotations are same thing again in the rotations, right? I mean, if blue attacks brown,
then brown attacks light green or whatever.
Full court, I got it. And then blue, okay, blue's what I get, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Or you can do it such that the blue, dark blue team stays on offense for 5 minutes. And so they'll attack at this end, right? And then they'll get the ball and they'll attack again at this end. And they'll get the ball and attack back at that end.
I got you. Yeah.
You want to just work with your, top five. You know, we might have eight players on this blue team. It might be my top eight players, and the other three will be out of bounds here. And they might just stay on offense for 10 minutes going back and forth, or we'll let each team go on offense and go on defense.
Yeah, I've tried both, Coach. Again, I've tried both. I just love having the offense, defense. I just get sloppy when I go offense, just keep the blue team on offense the whole time.
Yeah.
It's not game realistic to me.
It's not. I mean, and the only advantage to that is just if you want to really hone in on your offensive.
Yeah, it's true. And I've done both. And maybe it does help us out. I don't know. But I do love the offense defense factor on that.
So that's the last of our drills. And then maybe what I like to do to hang on a second here. Why is this not moving? Oh, there we go. Okay. So talk a little bit about how we scrimmage in practice. Because, again, I don't know if other coaches have had this experience, but I've had it where, you put your top five players together and you play against your second five, and it won't take long for that scrimmage to be 22-2.
Yeah.
Whatever. And if it's not, then you might have the wrong players on the top five, you know. So what we do when we scrimmage is we always keep our top 7, 8, or 9 for playing nine in a given year. We keep our top 7, 8, or 9 players together. And we actually, Kevin, we put the chairs out and we put the benches out. You know, we put the folding chairs out every day in practice when we scrimmage. Okay. And so I want to make this as game like as we possibly can. And so by having the benches there for both teams, you know, the players that aren't in have to be sitting just like they are in a game. When we substitute, they have to get up and, you know, they go from sitting to playing, you know, which is what they do in a game. And then my assistant, top assistant, will be sitting with them on the bench. Usually I'm walking around and we try and just simulate game conditions as much as we can when we scrimmage. Okay. And typically we scrimmage in sets of 5 or 10 possessions, 5 or 10 possessions. And we score each possession. Now we do this every time we scrimmage. A day doesn't go by where if we scrimmage, we don't score it. And we score every possession. So here's how we do it. We give them an offensive goal. We give them an offensive goal that they have to reach. Let's say usually we do 10 possession games. So it's a 10 possession scrimmage. They have to reach a goal of 1.20 or more points per possession. Now, we won't start this way the first day of practice that we scrimmage. We might start it at a goal of 1.00, right? But if they're scrimmaging 10 possessions, we have to score at least 10 points in those 10 possessions to reach 1 point per possession, if that's the goal. If the goal is 1.20, then they have to score 12 points in 10 possessions in order to meet the offensive goal. Then we give them a defensive goal of 0.5 or fewer points per possession. So if these are the goals that we're scrimmaging for 10 possessions, the top team, these are our top varsity guys, have to win those 10 possessions by a score of 12-5 or better, right? Could be 14-0, could be 14-1 or 18-1, whatever. But the goals are 12-5, right? Mm-hmm. We also have a turnover goal of either 20% or fewer or 10% or fewer. So if we start out the first week of practice, perhaps, the goal might be 1 point per possession on offense, usually 0.5 or 0.8 on defense, again, when we're first starting out. And our goal might be 20% turnover rate, which would be 2 turnovers per 10 possessions, right? Mm-hmm. Now, to me, that's a little bit high. But again, early in the practice, segment of the year, you're trying to improve the execution. All right, eventually, we'll move that to 1.2, 0.5, and 10% turnover rate. Okay, then we also have a rule that if at any point in those 10 possessions, the offensive or the other team rather, the non-varsity top rotation, if at any point they get 2 offensive rebounds, the game is automatically over and the top guys lose. So let me give you a scenario. Let's say that the top players are winning after 9 possessions. They're winning 18-0. And they're going into the 10th possession, right? It would be that, let me back this up. Let's say we've played 10 offensive possessions and the top players have scored 20 points. They've scored 2 points each possession. They had the ball, 10 straight possessions. They're winning 20-0. And now the second group has their last possession of the game. And they get 2 offensive rebounds in that possession.
They win.
Game is over and the top guys lose, even though they were leading 20-0. So my point is that I'm holding our guys accountable for every possession, including if they have let's say they made a 3-pointer every possession for 10 straight, they're winning 30-0. and they give up two offensive rebounds in that last defensive set, game's over, they've lost, right? So this is how we score our scrimmages. And we do this anytime that we go 5-on-5.
Yeah.
If there's a foul, we replay the possession.
Foul, replay. Okay.
Yep. And then if it happens twice in the same possession, it counts as a basket. So let's say in the first off, we always, or not always, we often start with the ball. Sometimes we'll, it depends who starts. Let's say we have the ball first and we don't score. They get the ball and we foul them. Foul call, blow the whistle, take the ball out of bounds. Still the first possession. If we foul again in that possession, the second team gets 2 points. It's our ball going the other way. Now we're down 2-0.
Right.
So the second possession, sorry, second foul in a possession is 2 points. First foul in a possession is a replay for the possession. Okay. So that's how we scored. And then we use this chart. This is an actual chart from practice that our manager keeps. And this was in November 20th of, I think, 2019. All right. And this is the actual chart. It was maroon against white. And here you see it was a 10-possession scrimmage. So the maroon team, that's the top players, turn the ball over. The white team turned the ball over. Okay, then we had the ball, didn't score. They scored. We're down 2-0. Then we scored, 2-2. They turned it over. Score still 2-2. Now we don't score. They scored. It's 5-2 in favor of the second team. We score. It's 5-4. They don't score. Still 5-4. We score again, 7-4. Turnover, 9-4, turnover. Nobody scores on the eighth possession. Two turnovers for us, or turnover for them, turnover again for them. All right, now we scored 10 points. We scored again the 10th possession. So we scored 10 points in 10 possessions, okay? 1 point per possession, okay? Two turnovers, 20%. They had four offensive rebounds. Okay, this might have been the second or third day of practice. We might not have stopped the drill for two offensive rebounds. Or maybe we did, and we may have let them play on. They may have ran and continued to play on. They had four. I'm sorry. Those are our four offensive rebounds, not theirs. They didn't have any offensive rebounds. So the score was 10-5. They had five turnovers. We had two. We would have run for the 20% possibly, depending on what the goal was that day. I don't remember what the goal was. But depending on the goal, we even up at the end of 10 possessions. And then we'll play another segment of 10 possessions. In this case, the score was 13-5. We had one turnover. They had three. We had one offensive rebound. They had none. And then we'll pay up if there's any consequence to be had. So this is how we do our scrimmaging. So if we come in on a Saturday, say at the end of the first week of practice, and we want to have scrimmage, our typical game has 60 possessions. So this year we average 65 possessions in a game. So if we want to have a 60 possession scrimmage, we might do three sets of 20 possessions. And then we'll take a break in between. We'll keep track of the points, set the goals accordingly. And we've even done some things like this. So sometimes I've said to the team, to the top guys, look, if they take a shot and the shot hits the rim, the game is over. Right? So, I mean, on those days when I really want to get after them defensively, I might say, we're going to do a five possession scrimmage. If they hit the rim on a shot, the game is over. Right. So you better get after them hard and close out hard without fouling. They foul once, we replay possession, they foul a second time, it's 2 points, it's It's the equivalent in the rim, game is over. So we try to keep our scrimmages very, very competitive. Again, because, you know, we've all been to practices. I remember when I was a college coach and I would go to high school practices and, you know, I'm happy to be there because they have a really good player, a Division I player. And I see a scrimmage where the top seven or eight guys are winning, you know, 35-3 after 5 minutes. And now there's no accountability on the subsequent possessions. So we find that this system of scrimmaging really helps us hold our team accountable.
Yeah.
Again, I want to make every possession, accountable. I want to make every possession worthwhile. So we find that this system, and we've been doing this for a long time, did it as college coaches, and we've done it at Northridge for the past 20 years, our scrimmages this way. So anyway, that's kind of how we go about setting up our scrimmages. And then, one last thing maybe here, Kevin, if I can. And if I've gone over my time, let me know. I'd be happy to jump off. But the way we deploy our coaches and managers in practice, again, the coaches are deployed as shown here. If we're doing a full court activity, again, every coach has a ball in his hand. I mentioned that already. And I don't want all the coaches congregating together, you know, in one area of the court. And,
can be a problem for sure.
It can be a problem,
yeah.
I try and tell our coaches not to talk to each other during practice. I mean, you might make a quick point about something, but, you know, guys, if players are on the court, we're only on the court for 2 hours, 2 hours and 15 minutes. Every point, every minute is valuable. Make sure that we're, you know, dispersed and we're coaching, you know, whether they're shooting free throws.
Yeah. Coach, can I jump in? I want to get your opinion on that. That's a major problem, particularly at our level. I think I try to coach them up, but I do see that a lot in practices that I go view. I see a lot of buddy coaching. I want my coaches coaching players.
Exactly.
Their job is to coach players, get with individually, and you definitely have to space them out. This is like probably one of the best points you have made so far. It's kind of an underrated point. I love it.
I think so. You know, and I tell you one, again, I hearken back to my mentors, and I've been the luckiest guy in the world that I've always been in the right place for some reason with the right people. And again, I'll hearken back to Jim Cruz, who I worked with at the University of Evansville for 4 years and remains a lifelong friend to this day. And Jim always corrected our staff on this point. He said, look, we're playing a 4-on-4 full court drill, and a guy makes a shot, and there's four coaches on the court, and everybody's saying nice pass, nice screen, nice shot. Meanwhile, there's a good offensive play. There was a defensive play that needed to be corrected.
Right.
And vice versa, right? A guy makes a great defensive play, jumps in the passing lane, steals the ball, takes it down the other end, dunks the ball in or whatever, lays it in. And all the coaches are, hey, nice defense. Good job. Way to get in the passing lane. You know, way to do that. And meanwhile, that good defensive play on the other side of the ball, there's an offensive play that needs to be corrected. So I'm always on our coaches about this. Guys, we can't always everybody watching the same thing. You know, if we do that, there are players who are making mistakes or whatever that need to be corrected. You know, the other thing is oftentimes we would do this and we do this to this day. So let's say we're doing a 4-on-4 half court or 5-on-5, or we're working on our defense or whatever it might be. I might take the offense myself, and I have three assistants, and I'll assign each assistant to a part of the defense. You've got the guards, you've got the forwards, you've got the center. I don't want all three of those guys coaching the same player. I want them coaching different aspects of the defense, for example.
Yeah.
Or maybe all four of us might be coaching the defense, and then we'll each take a player, and then I'll jump over to the offensive side when there's a dead ball, whatever. So I think the organization and deployment of your staff, again, Kevin, I go back to what I said in the first installment of this Zoom clinic in part one, that the practice is the hinge. The practice is the hinge between a coach's philosophy and what happens on game night. You know, the most important aspect of our jobs is how we organize practice, how we deploy our coaches and managers, you know, how we set up our activities. You know, I remember, you know, hearing John Wooden, the great John Wooden, talk often at clinics, and had the opportunity to get to know some of his former players and assistant coaches. And, you know, they would say, look, you know, Coach Wooden spent more time organizing his practice than he did actually executing that practice. And I know we're high school coaches and we have other responsibilities, and it's not, you know, we don't have the luxury of a college coach to sit in office for 3 hours to plan that day's practice. But maybe this speaks to the organization and the practice planning that takes place outside the season to develop a practice format and a practice plan and an organizational system that enables you to plan your practices quicker, because as high school coaches, we do have other responsibilities. We're teaching or administrative, yeah, whatever it might be. So again, you know, coaches calling out scores, points, et cetera, to the managers on a scoreboard. I mean, this type of efficiency in practice to me is whatever success we've had, first and foremost, is because of our players and the kind of, you know, young men that we've had the great privilege to coach at Northridge, come from great families. And then secondly has been our practices. I think our practices are what have made us successful next to our players. It's not coming up with a, you know, key adjustment in the middle of a game. That happens, and sometimes those things turn out well, but we all know that the bulk of preparation, you know, preparation is the key to success, right? And practice preparation is right at the heart of what we do as coaches.
Yeah, it's huge. What great points, Coach. I mean, I have so many, like I always say, golden nuggets from Coach Ray. Well, it's unbelievable. If you're coaches, if you're not taking some stuff out of this, man, then you're just not. This is the time of year, Coach, where this is right here. This is where you sharpen the saw, baby.
Absolutely.
I mean, even great coaches like you are still, you're still probably looking, hey, how can we run our practices better? I mean, more efficient.
Yeah. Yeah, like I told you, we I think I mentioned this in part one, is, you know, we had our players come up with action items, our returning players,
yes,
and then we as coaches came up with action items, and that's what our off season is about, is how are we going to be, you know, how are we going to continue getting better, and how, you know, how can we do our jobs better? You know, the day we stop, you know, the day we stop improving, I mean, or trying to improve, then we should, as coaches, that's a signal to maybe time to do something else. I mean, you know, we expect our players to get better and, you know, to improve their skills. And by gosh, we need to do the same. And, you know, isn't it amazing that, you know, and I remember one of my great mentors, Bud Presley, of happy memory, told me one time that you know, you could spend a lifetime studying the coaching profession and barely scratch the surface. And I think that's true. I think that, you know, there's always more to learn, you know, and so what you see, what I've presented is really what I've learned and gleaned from so many others, and what I've kind of stumbled upon myself as a result of the mistakes that I've made along the way.
Absolutely, Coach. Hey, thank you again. Before you go, I just one final point that I want to get your feedback on is I was listening to Buzz Williams yesterday. I love Buzz. That guy is so impactful. He's so smart. He's so thoughtful. By the one word, thoughtful. And he was on the Coaching You podcast, which I absolutely love, with Brendan Sir. He mentioned, he talked about studying the game, and he reads 6 books a month during the season.
Amazing.
And he has a strategy for it. But what he said was, he has studied how people become experts in particular topics. It takes about 18 minutes every day to study something, to become an expert over time. Wow. And just And he has some other details, but you have to constantly study. I'm probably guilty of that. I probably do too much. But what do you feel about that? I don't know how much coaches are really wanting to become experts in their field.
I mean, that's a great point. And yeah, I like to think that I try to do that. Not again, you know, two avenues or three avenues that I try to enlist myself every year. One is, you know, to watch film of our team. Another is that I like to go to other sources. So whether it's talking to other coaches like yourself or friends of mine or people that I think are doing a really good job in something and learning from them or whatever. And then third is reading. I read a lot myself, and I also journal a lot. I like to journal during the season. And for example, I have a journal right now. And as I read things or hear things, I jot them down. I take notes on it. And I have a section in my notes that I call themes for next year. And, you know, I might hear something or see something and or read something, and I might jot that down as one of my themes to think about for next year with our team. You know, I try to talk to our team every day, as we should. I should, and I do it in different ways. Sometimes after practice, I just sit them down on the edit of court and talk to them there. I grab a chair and sit down, or I take them to a classroom, or sometimes in a huddle, it might be, you know, 2 minutes, or it might be 15 or 20 minutes. But I plan what I'm going to say as much as I plan anything else. You know, right. what are the themes that I want to promote in a given season? And some of those themes are recurring. You know, they're part of our team environment, our team culture, our team ethos. And those are recurring themes that I stress every day. But there are others that I will, be particular to that team. So anyway, you got a visitor there.
Hey, the volleyball coach, man, coming in. Jay, she didn't know okay. I was doing it too.
Maybe we can learn something from her.
Yes, yes.
Your goalkeeper. Like,
yes.
I'm so sorry. I live
not
at home.
Okay, gotcha.
All right, Coach. Hey, really quick. I know you have to go and so forth. I really appreciate everything you shared. I just want to, I have learned, these are three of the top things I learned from Will Ray's central practice drills today on that. Number one, deployment of coaches, basketball under the arms. It sounds simple, but Coach, I love that. So we're gonna deploy that really quick. What a great idea, so there's no wasted time. I love the 10 possession games. And I think we don't think about this as coaches, and I love how you measure every possession. I love that. And the last thing is what Bobby Knight said, be a quick thinker, mental transitions. Those are the three key things that I got out of 10. There's more of them, but those are the three keys. But Coach, thank you again for sharing. How can coaches get a hold of you?
Sure. Best way is email. If you go to our school website, northridgeprep.org, you can find my email address there. But here's my email address. It's WREY@NorthRidgePrep.org. And if you email me, I'll get back to you as soon as I can. I mean, usually within a day, and I'll be happy to share any information. Again, I'm just, I see myself as a messenger. I've received the messages from a lot of coaches, and all I want to do is, you know, share them with others, and hopefully that will help others enjoy the profession, coaching profession, as much as I have.
Absolutely on that. And Coach, I told him before about I first saw Coach Ray in his spots offense video.
Now you're dating yourself, Kevin.
Oh, no doubt, man. And I've been running that offense forever, by the way. Thanks to Coach Ray. Now, he runs it better than me. I should have him come to a clinic for my players. But But great teacher of the game. Coach, thank you for joining us. And coaches, reach out to Coach on that. He's a great wealth of knowledge and resource that we have in our profession. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you very much, Kevin, and keep up the good work. You're doing a great job.
All right, thank you.
Coaches, thank you for listening to my Championship Vision Basketball Podcast. I know there are some great podcasts out there you can listen to, but I really appreciate you taking the time and being part of the Championship Vision Basketball Podcast family. I would like to welcome basketball coaches to the new Championship Vision Podcast Basketball Coaching Library. Currently, my library consists of over 50 plus digital video interviews with some of the best high school and college basketball coaches in the country, such as Coach Jerry Finkbeiner, former college women's basketball coach at Utah State and Oral Roberts University, and four-time national NAIA women's basketball champion, Southern Nazarene University, and creator of the Twilight Zone Press defense. Also, get access to great high school coaches like Rhonda Farney, four-time Texas State girls basketball state champion, and 47 years at the helm of Georgetown High School in Georgetown, Texas. How can you get access to these great basketball coaches? Go to KevinFurtado/CoachTube. To purchase these video clinics separately, or you can access all of my video clinics in a special monthly rate of $5 per month. You can also access these at KevinFurtado/CoachTube. But go under the Championship Vision Basketball Membership Library to get access to this. You will get access to all my video library for a special rate of $5 a month. Each week, I will produce two new special guest videos for you to review. In addition, I will provide insightful articles on some of my new podcast interviews. Coaches, thank you for being a listener.